of liquid argon, and in which one ton is in dilution volume to do a direct arithmetic search. So the signal we're looking for is the scintillation light that's produced by nuclear recoils. And these nuclear recoils are produced from wind particles scattering onto argon-40 nuclei. So why do we use liquid argon? Liquid argon has excellent pulse shift discrimination between our signal and the background electron recoils. I'll get into more details later about that one. So liquid argon is a very good scintillator, and it's inexpensive and easy to purify. And we only use liquid argon, so it's a single phase detector, no high voltage in the powder volume. It's relatively easy to scale up. Okay, so this is the scintillation timing profile in liquid argon. The red line is electron recoil, and the blue line is the nuclear recoils. As you can see, the electron recoils has a larger fraction of late scintillation light compared to nuclear recoils. So that allows us to distinguish between these two types of events. And our study shows that in liquid argon, it allows us to have a threshold at about 20 keV/dE. And for one ton of liquid argon, it will allow a spin-independent cross-section on the order of 10 to the minus 46 centimeters at 100 keV/dE. So this is what it looks like on the exclusion plot. And these are the current batch limits from CDMS and Reno 100. And at 100 keV/dE, we are about 100 times more sensitive.
Could you tell us what is this, how the threshold translates into nuclear energy?
The quenching factor is about 1/4.
So 1/4?
1/4, 0.25. So it's actually nuclear at 20 kVR. Okay, so this is what the deep sensitivity counter detector looks like. So the powder volume is enclosed in this spherical acrylic vessel. The PMTs we're using are high quantum efficiency Hammer-Maxwell PMTs. We're using 255 of them, and they're going to be operating in warm temperature. That is, we have 50 centimeters of acrylic in between the PMTs and the liquid argon volume. So these are for guiding the light, the scintillation light, all the way to the PMTs, and most importantly, shielding the neutrons from PMT glass, because PMT glass is relatively more radioactive, from our target volume. So it also acts as a thermal shielding, because liquid argon is 85 K, very cool. So, outside of the PMTs is a stainless steel shell to enclose the whole volume, but just in case the acrylic vessel breaks, so for safety precaution. Now, I have to mention that the scintillation light inside liquid argon is at about 128 nanometers wavelength, so it's not visible. So we do have to apply for a layer of wavelength shifting, we call TPV, on the inner surface of the acrylic vessel. So, but the TPV can be purified, and the acrylic is very clean, now we know. So there's only liquid argon, acrylic, and TPV wavelength shifter inside the neutron shield. So that allows a very low background. So the whole sphere sits inside a 8-meter water shielding to shield the neutrons coming from the rock in Zimlab. that there are some little PMTs attached on the outside of the steel shell for active neuron needle purposes. So the detector is going to be running at SnowLab, which probably most of you already know. It's 2 kilometers underground inside a nickel mine in Sudbury, about 4 hours north of Toronto. So we have a very nice surface facility and right next to the nickel mine shaft. And then this is how we go underground. And then you have to walk another 2 kilometers to get to the clean SnowLab area. And these are some of the experiments that are already in SnowLab or will come to SnowLab in the near future. So our detector, along with MiniClean, will sit in the Q hall, which is here. The deep one, which I will talk about, is a 7 kilogram prototype detector. It's taking data at the moment in the J drift here, and the coop. The smaller coop and the larger coop are allocated space on over here and here, and then the Picasso is here. So this is the original Snow detector, and now belongs to Snow Plus double neutrino with double better experiment. And then Super CDMS is allocated space over here. Okay, so what are the backgrounds that we're dealing with? So we have three major types of backgrounds: beta gamma, neutron backgrounds, and surface alpha backgrounds. So argon-39 is the largest source of beta backgrounds in our detector, and we expect about 10 to the 9 beta events from argon-39 in 3 years of running in our energy region of interest. So there's possibility of getting depleted argon, that is a lower fraction of argon-39 in argon. We're working closely with Princeton group to get that. So the current measurements show at least a factor of 50 depletion. So the neutron, I'll get more into that later. So the neutron backgrounds, because we're 2 kilometers underground, the neon flux is deeply suppressed, and we take great care of selecting clean materials and the shielding of the neutron backgrounds. And the surface contamination, we will use the surface device to clean out the dirty surface area, and then there's a beneficial volume cut from the position reconstruction. So this is our background budget, and this is what we're aiming for, less than 0.2 background from each category in 3 years of running. Okay, so deep one, the drawing is over here. It's a 7 kilogram liquid argon detector. It's a different shape than the DQN 600. It says cylindrical acrylic cylinder holds the liquid argon in place, and we have acrylic light guides, and we have 2 PMTs on the probing core. And so we've done a lot of background studies with this one. These are the real signals. So the top one is a waveform coming from a nuclear recoil event. So x-axis is timing in nanoseconds, y-axis is the voltage that we get out of the pin heat, the amplitude in volts. So you can see a large peak, large prompt peak in the yellow region, and very little late light in the blue region. And compared to the beta gamma events, you see a large peak in prompt peak and a lot of late light.
What is the y-axis reading?
It's volts.
F sub what?
It's so for example, this is at an amplitude about 180 millivolts.
It means the rightmost F prompt.
Yeah. Oh, F prompt.
Oh, this one. I'll come to that. By the way, so a simple discriminator, which is just a fraction of the prompt light versus the total light, gives us a very good discrimination between these two types of events. And this is the calibration data that we took with a recent beryllium neutral source. So y-axis is F prompt, x-axis is energy. So you see the top is the neutron band, and the bottom is a gamma band. And our threshold is at about 20 keV.
Do you have the third band for this red region, the vertical one for this end?
This one over here?
Yeah.
That's very low energy. That's most likely, at that energy, the PSD is pretty poor. And it's most likely beta gamma emits all over.
So is this just from one of the PMP signals?
No, this is some of the children.
Okay, so to scale up you with some of the PMPs.
Right.
Okay.
These are the coincidence events. Okay, so we also took data with the sodium-22 gamma source, and the blue band is the F prompt distribution of those gamma events. This is inside our energy region of interest. And just for comparison, this is the neutron mass. So there's no leakage for about 220 million gamma events inside the neutron F prompt region. So that demonstrates that our PSD is better than 6 × 10⁻⁸. In this energy region. Those are the data that we took when the detector was running on surface at Queen's University. And we then moved the detector underground, so less background. And now we've achieved at least 3 × 10⁻⁸. And since we've used a higher light yield PMPs, and so at higher light yield, we have lower threshold, so that study is still ongoing. You can ask me questions later, but I'm not going to go into details. And this slide, a very simple statistics model show that we can get down to 10⁻¹⁰ at 20 keV for the Quadarga. That pointer is dying, but that anyway. Neutron backgrounds. So the most dominant neutron background comes from neutrons generated in the alpha N reaction. So these alphas can come from various sources: uranium, thorium, lead 10, and can also come from radon emission from various materials in the detector. There's smaller fractions of contribution from fission neutrons, and the muons can be efficiently detailed in our detector.
If you want a new pointer, this is press the red button.
Okay, so this is simulation, the nuclear recoil energy spectrum in liquid argon from uranium alpha N neutrons in the pellet vessel. So these different colors are just different beta cleaning cuts, including the beneficial volume cut and the PSD cut, the F-bomb cut. So the red line is what's left over after the beta cleaning cut. So we can then calculate the leakage, the probability of neutrons leaking into our energy region of interest, and we are mimicking whips. So this is the neutron leakage as a function of distance from the acrylic vessel. So you can see, as expected, the leakage drops as a function of distance. So the further away from the detector, the less leakage we see, and it drops more than a factor of 100. So this is right about where the PNPs are at the end. So at the PNP positions, the leakage is only at about 10 to the minus 7 leakage rate. So we can then set the radioactivity requirements for our detector materials according to that Nicola study. And for example, for acrylic light guide, we require on the order of millibecquerel per kilogram cleanness. And these are the requirements for PNPs, PNP cable, and for example, steel shell. Now, each of these numbers corresponds only to 0.01 with light background event in 3 years, since we have many contributions. So that's a pretty tight restriction.
How does that translate to cross section at a given mass? Do you know what would be?
So these are just limiting the background events. And so the cross section at 100 GeV 10 to the minus 46 assumes no background event.
Right, so I mean, how low would the cross section have to be to start hitting this number, 10 to the minus 48 roughly? To get, so.
No, so the more backgrounds that we have, the less stringent we can set our limits to. Put it that way.
Right, I guess if I multiply this number by 100, I get one event every 3 years.
Right, right.
In terms of wings, what is the cross section that corresponds to? One event per 3 years.
One event per year for liquid argon.
I mean, this is just totally subdominant to the argon 3. Totally subdominant.
Okay.
The argon 39.
No.
So it doesn't make sense to say what limits that. The argon 39 is dominant.
Okay. Thanks, man. All right, so the PNP gamma ISA gives a higher rate of what we require, but still, in the end, it corresponds to less than 0.2 backgrounds in 3 years, and the PNP neutrons are the most dominant neutron source in our detector. So coming to alpha backgrounds, so alphas don't travel very far, so we only care about the surface layers of the our detector. So these are different scenarios of alpha decays, and basically if the alphas are going into the argon and we see most of its energy, then it's at MeV level, so we don't care about them, it's high energy. And but there are scenarios where alphas go into the PVD and acrylic, and then the recoil nucleus coming into argon, and that can produce wave-like signals. So we do see these alphas in the deep one detector, and as you can see, this is the energy spectrum of high energy events, and you see these alpha peaks coming from right on 222, which is the subchain of uranium 238, and right on 220 is the subchain of thorium 232. And so the nice thing about this is we can also do coincidence tag of these alphas, since they're closely timing related, and the timing study of these events also found consistent results of these rates. Okay, so in deep 3600, this is a long list of alpha sources of background. So the most dominant parts are from two. One is closer to liquid argon. There's the surface of the TPB wavelength shifter. There's the TPB itself, and on the surface of the acrylic vessel, and the inner microns thickness of the acrylic vessel itself. So those alphas can produce wavelength signals. And the other part is in the neck region. So we have these liquid argon process systems in the neck region, and then they write a imminent write-off and produce alphas, and those alphas will be attached to the detector surface. So this is a simulation on the energy spectrum deposited from polonium-210 decaying on the surface of the PBB. And you can see the full alpha energy peak in liquid argon with the quenched energy. And you can see full alpha energy in TPP. So I should mention the TPP also scintillates. So the down zooming in to lower energy region, those are the wave-like events.
So what is this exponential then?
It's just the probability of leakage, the fraction of events. So in this scenario, about 15% of the outputs of the polonium-210 decay produce wave-like events. So we can then set the relative purity limits for acrylic vessel and the TBB as well. So I didn't mention this here, but for acrylic vessel itself, it's a very strict limit. It's only order of micro background acryl per kilogram of material for uranium, thorium, and lead-210. So the existing assay of acrylic is limited by the sensitivity of what we have right now in snow lab. So the sensitivity of the germanium detector underground at the moment. But still, it gives less than 0.4 wave-like events in 3 years. And currently, there's no measurement of it's not sensitive enough to detect polonium-210 alphas. So I'll talk about this better assay of the acrylic later. So there are various ways of reducing surface backgrounds, including acrylic quality assurance, removing dirty surface, and TPB purification, position reconstruction, and alpha positive discrimination. And we've applied some of those to deep one detector, and this is what we have. This is the very recent data from deep one. And the black line shows all the background events. And with PSD cut, this is what's left over. This is cutting close to our energy region of interest. And those are the expected events from the Rodon 222 daughters. So this is at the light yield of 3.6 PU per kV. Keep in mind we only have 2 PMPs in deep one. So we've studied the light yield in deep 3600, and we expect at least 6 PU per kV. And that would further allow us to cut down the thresholds. So this is a table of 5 years of hard work cutting down deep one backgrounds, starting with million becquerels of background in our wind energy region, cutting all the way down to a micro becquerel with a lot of improvements to the cleanness, including, for example, the glove box preparation of the acrylic chamber and sanding the acrylic chamber inside the glove box with nitrogen purge gas, so reducing the radon absorption on the surface. And then replacing dirty materials with cleaner materials, TPB purification, and including a neck plug to remove neck events. Okay, so for deep 3600, it's very hard to go in to send the inner surface. So we've designed a mechanical device to help us do that. So these are two arms that can stand up and the surfacer comes in and out from the sealed glove box on the top of the detector. And then once it goes into the acrylic vessel, these arms open up and then send the acrylic vessel for us. So the receptor itself is made with very low red elimination material. And the design has been finalized, and some components are out for fabrication now. And we plan to test this device at Queens. So there's this liquid argon process system in the neck region, and we have to select very low red elimination material. So we've done a lot of studies with these welds that can be very varied. So we've reduced the red elimination from those welds all the way down to 25 microfarads per meter now. And our target is one. And that needs more work, potentially with calculating and cleaning. So this is a picture of those welds and the materials being counted in a red elimination chamber. So okay, the acrylic vessel. So this is one of the most important parts of the detector. Now, the good news is we know that acrylic can be purified when it's in liquid mode, and the high purity level can be achieved. So we have selected Reynolds polymer technology RPT to make our acrylic vessel, and they have agreed to have us closely monitor the process of manufacturing. Thank you. Actually, at the moment, we have a scientist in the RPP Asia Thailand factory observing the process of the making of our acrylic. And so we've also developed a furnace system that will evaporate kilograms of acrylic so that we can count more acrylic at one time. And then we purchased a high-purity germanium well detector, which will get us down to the sensitivity that we need. And this will also be sensitive to lead 210. Okay, so after the acrylic vessel is made, it's gonna be shipped to University of Alberta for machining. So there are these stuffs that need to be machined on the outside of the acrylic vessel to attach the light guides onto. And this machining system has been exercised on a 20-inch acrylic vessel. So we actually have this 20-inch acrylic vessel now, and we plan to use that for cryogenics test. So the bonding of the neck collar, neck, and light guide will have an underground at small level. And the bonding of the light guide, the technique is also developed by University of Alberta, and we have a good understanding of the system, and the cryogenic tests of the bonds have also been extensively studied. Okay, so the light attenuation in acrylic, since we have 50 centimeters of acrylic, so it's very important to make sure that we don't lose a lot of light through all that length of acrylic. So we ordered samples from several acrylic suppliers, and for each sample, we machined a set of acrylic rods with different length, and for each rod, we did a measurement of the light transmission, and then fitted the absorption length. And in the end, we selected Spartec as our supplier for light guides. And we've also counted out their acrylic, and their acrylic is pure enough for us. So this is just a drawing showing how we attach PMT onto the light guide. And the optical coupling is pretty important, and we selected mineral oil for in between the PMT phase and the light guide. And it works very well, as yeah, but tested this extensively in heat one detector. Okay, the status of the infrastructure. This is the picture showing the cube hall, and this is mini clean water tank, and this is our D3600 water tank. And the deck was finished last year, and recently we finished the water shielding tank for D3600. So, like I said, we've ordered our acrylic vessel with RPP and light guide acrylic from Spartec, and the PMTs have arrived from Hamamatsu. And we've also received high voltage system, electronics, and slow controls. The cryo cooler system will be in Snow Lab in January next year. And we expect the acrylic vessel installation early next year. So this is our collaboration with collaborators all over the Canada. And this is a wider collaborative work with the clean collaboration. So to summarize, liquid argon allows a very good, simple dark matter detector. And Deep 3600 is designed for very low background. It will allow 10 to the minus 46 centimeters square wind sensitivity. The construction of the detector will has begun and will continue throughout next year. And then we do expect data taking starting 2013. Thank you.
More questions?
So you showed the plot in the very early thing. What was your reach after 3 years?
What is
how low can you go in cross section after 3 years?
10 to the minus 46.
10 to the minus 46 at what mass?
100.
100? And this is assuming the background assessment you showed during the talk.
Can be achieved.
But does that assume the Princeton help or not? The reduction?
This is without the deep
no,
so we plan to run at least for 2 to 3 years with natural argon.
Uh-huh.
And the depleted argon is quite expensive, so we need to get that money. And also, right now, the news that we get is they can produce 10 kilograms of liquid depleted argon per day. And we need that to be more faster. So that's still in progress.
Thank you.
You mentioned a surge window of 20 to 40 kVe. Could you push that another end? Reasonably?
Lower end.
Or higher?
Higher, yes. It's just not going to be as sensitive to ones. Lower. With higher light yield, yes. We have better TSC, and we can push the energy threshold of the little bit lower. But how low, we don't know. 15 for sure.
But for example, on the higher end, I mean, that's just a matter of expanding your analysis.
Right. Yeah, that's just a matter of, but it's not going to be as nice for this solution part at higher energy pressure.
But lower energies, it all depends then on your photomultipliers in the end. I mean, the light yield you mentioned.
The light yield.
It's really the limiting factor.
And also because, as you can see from that plot, that if we don't improve the light yield, then at lower energy, at lower PEs, the PSC gets a little bit nastier.
As far as going to higher energy, I mean, you can certainly do that analysis. It's just not going to be very sensitive to vanilla WIMPs. That can make a difference if you make it higher than 40. If you have some other thing you want to look for, I mean, it would be easy to do, I think.
Yeah, pushing down.
And you will also get a form factor of the pressure. It's already 80 kV.
80
kV,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.